tears go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames. Freedom, freedom, I can't move. Freedom,
what is up, Wisconsin? How y'all doing today? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's Debate Tuesday. And I'm sure my producer, Mr. Brian Kelly, is very excited for this debate.
I'll be actually producing our live coverage tonight starting at 7:30.
Wonderful. So you're going to have fancy Brian Kelly producing Civic Media's live coverage of the first and maybe only, Trump-Harris debate. That coverage is going to start at 7:30. You're going to have Todd Alba, Trigvi Olsen, Terry Bell, and of course, Brian Kelly.
Yeah, it'll be fantastic. It'll be live, and it'll be possibly fun and entertaining and maybe exhausting. Maybe we'll all experience a decade together. It'll be fun.
Yeah, so this is where I want to start today's show. But I want to give everybody the lineup for today because we got a lot going on. Busy, busy afternoon. It is Tuesday, so it is Yes Chef Tuesday with Adam Pawlak. He'll be tuning in with us at 2:30. We're going to talk about annoying private chef customers, clients.
Oh, yeah.
That'll be fun.
By the way, if you are interested in a private chef, Adam is available to you.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that. We'll talk about some of his stories. May even touch on farmers markets. 3 o'clock, as we do every day, we got Maggie and the Millionaires talking money. This one is special for me. We're going to be joined by the Martin Ginsburg Chair of Taxation at Georgetown University Law Center, Dorothy Brown. And we're going to talk about how this tax system is actually racist. And why that is. We'll get into it. So Professor Brown will be joining us. She's going to be at 3 o'clock. And at 3:30, my little buddy, my good friend, Dom Salvia, host of the Dominic Salvia Show, will be joining me. We'll have some musings on the goings-on. We haven't settled on a topic. We'll see what moves us in the moment.
So it'll depend on what happens in the next hour or so, because this is usually the hour that things drop.
Things happen. It's a great couple of hours to be on the radio. Thank you all for joining us. As Andrew from Maine has pointed out on our text line, this evening's debate coverage will be the fanciest of debate coverages because it's Fancy Brian. We call him Fancy Brian because he spells his name with a Y. Whenever you call, say hello, Fancy Brian. Please, be nice to Brian.
Please do. But if I don't answer, it's probably because I already know your number and I know you.
Yes.
So we'll get you on that much faster.
855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. What are you looking forward to, worried about, excited for this evening? Do you have some good one-liners that you think Kamala Harris should use?
I want her to make him do stuff. I want her to bait him into defending whatever stupid thing he has to say, or going, that makes no sense whatsoever. I'm just going to keep talking.
So the thing, and where I want to start today is, there is this, it's not really a new term. I think it was coined back in 2010, but it is all of a sudden burst back onto the scene to describe what the media does when Donald Trump says garbled nonsense for minutes that is completely non-responsive to a question. It's called sane washing, right? And I'll give you a couple examples of that. But here's my experience that I wanted to share with all of you and my concerns that I have tonight. So I was talking, in fact, with Dom, who's going to join me again at 3:30 this afternoon. We were walking to get lunch close by here, our downtown Waukesha studio. And I was talking to him about my experience as a lawyer. And as a trial lawyer in particular. And I shared with him that I have basically broken down the universe of lawyers into 5 categories. There are just 5 categories of lawyers. That is it. There are variations on themes. There can be overlapping themes. But there are only 5 themes, 5 categories. That's it. Okay? Here are the 5 categories. And don't worry, folks. I will bring this all back around. I have litigated against all of these types. All right? Type 1, you'll all be shocked to hear, is the liar lawyer. The lawyer who will say anything. Think Alina Haba, right? The lawyer will lie their butts off. Doesn't matter. No fidelity to the truth. that's Trump's kind of lawyer. You know what I'm saying? So you got the liar lawyer. You got the bully lawyer, right? They're like pounding the desk and screaming and acting like a hothead.
Didn't you do that? Didn't you?
Now, some clients love that. Like, I've seen lawyers that I know to be totally incompetent who just bark a lot get hired because people think that's how lawyers should behave. It's not just a cue. So you got the liar lawyer, you got the bully lawyer. You have the lazy lawyer. The lazy lawyer that knows neither facts nor law and just kind of makes stuff up as it occurs to them. I've litigated against many of those. Donald Trump probably digs that kind of lawyer too, as long as the stuff that the lawyer makes up supports Trump's own fantasies. So you got the liars, the bullies, the lazy lawyers. Then you've got what I'm going to put into a category, like the nitwit lawyer. It also encompasses like the lawyers that are just bat guano crazy. Okay? You got the totally incompetent, nitwit, bat guano crazy lawyer. Those are the four categories. The fifth category is the competent lawyer, right? What is a competent lawyer? A competent lawyer knows the facts, knows the law and how it applies to the facts, can put together a cogent legal argument based on the law and the facts, and knows how to tell a story that is intuitively appealing. Those are the basics of being a competent lawyer. My experience is that I will take the lying lawyer, I will take the bully lawyer, always. The liars and the bully lawyers, I love them. My favorite type of lawyer is the competent lawyer. I want to litigate against, I want to join, I want to fight with, on behalf of my client, the competent lawyer. That's my favorite one. Then I'll take the liars and the bullies. The worst lawyers to litigate against are the lazy lawyers and the incompetent bat guano crazy lawyers. And here's why, and this is the analogy to the debate tonight that I'm really worried about. I liked litigating and fighting and arguing with super competent lawyers. Because what we were able to do is clearly join issue, make arguments about the actual question in the case, the actual dispute. Like, what is the thing that we disagree about?
Maggie, you're saying that a competent lawyer has a basis in reality that both of you can...
Correct. We know what the legal issue is. We agree about these facts. Here are the facts we don't agree about, right? And it's very clear. And you make your arguments to the jury or the judge, and they understand what's at issue, okay? I loved litigating with competent lawyers because you actually get to do the lawyering thing, okay? I can deal with the bullies because they're just worried about beating their chest. I can deal with the liars because I can show them to be liars and unreliable, and then the juries don't like them and judges don't trust them. You can deal with all the worst, the absolute worst lawyers to litigate against are the lazy lawyers who master neither facts nor law, and the totally incompetent bat guano crazy lawyers because they're just out to lunch. Because what ends up happening, you actually have to explain or construct the argument that you think they're trying to make so that you can rebut it. In other words, it's like you have to do their work for them. Because otherwise, it's like, I don't even know how to respond to that. I think that counsel is trying to say that the sun rises in the west and sets in the east. But Your Honor, we know that that's not true, right? Like, you have to construct their argument. And often, they simply don't know what it is that they're arguing. Does this sound a little familiar? This is like Donald Trump, where the meanderings, the unfinished thoughts, the tangents, the relating of things that don't relate, the lack of specificity, and the constant lying makes it really difficult to debate a person like that. Right? So that's one of the things tonight, this afternoon, that I'm worried about. So again, I often have thought I've probably litigated against, and this is terribly depressing, I have encountered probably an equal proportion of competent lawyers to the lazy, incompetent, bat guano crazy lawyers. Like, that's sad to say, but this is why people hate lawyers. Most of them are bat guano crazy.
I wish I didn't completely believe you immediately.
I have hated doing that because it takes so much more effort. And it frankly adds complexity where there needn't be any. Right? And so you see a version of this that happens in the media. So, for example, yesterday we listened to this completely incoherent rambling of hundreds of words that Donald Trump gave at the Economic Club of New York on Friday in response to the question, how are you going to make childcare more affordable for American families? And he didn't answer the question. Reporting then said, well, we think he's talking about tariffs. By the way, I don't think he actually used the word tariff anywhere in his response. And so by explaining or using snippets that may appear cogent, sort of, the media is making Trump's argument for him. You get my drift here? They're sane-washing it. They're taking what is nonsense, and they're giving it some sense. Because it's so damn difficult to talk with, and certainly next to impossible to argue with, the bat guano crazy, incompetent, lazy lawyers. Or in this case, presidential candidates. We're going to talk more about this concept of sane washing. I want to hear from you. What are you looking for? What are you worried about, excited about tonight at the debate? 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. We'll take your thoughts next. My name is Maggie Dawn. That is my producer, Fancy Brian Kelly. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked, folks. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Michael Cohen is a very talented lawyer. He's a good lawyer in my firm.
I can't wait for this debate. I can't. I'm excited. I'm nervous.
Well, it can't be as bad as the last.
Nope. Surely cannot.
I mean, it could.
No, it can't. Can't be that bad.
Are they free walking on stage? Can he just stalk behind her?
Can he stalk like he did Clinton?
That was weird. And people were like, yeah, let's vote for that guy.
She said after the debate, well, by the way, welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. That's Brian Kelly. He's my producer. We're talking about the debate tonight because that's what's up. Hillary Clinton said after that debate that when he sort of crept up behind her, she literally, she didn't use the word skeeved, but I think she said like it made my skin crawl or something very basic like that. It was really creepy. I think she's going to try to
get
under
his skin. He was literally breathing down my neck. Yeah. My skin crawled.
Yeah, that. Thank you, Brian.
That's what it feels like being next to Donald Trump.
I hope that she doesn't fall down the rabbit hole of trying to construct his arguments for him. I hope she does not engage in sane washing Trump. I hope she does what I would do, which is look at him and be like, I have no idea what that guy said, but here's my plan to fix X. Sir, you didn't answer the question. They asked about childcare, not about tariffs. Tariffs don't fund childcare unless there's legislation. What legislation, sir, are you going to pass to help fund childcare? You didn't answer the question. Would you please shut up? You're like a child. Even kids can be quiet for 90 seconds. Can I speak? Right? Like,
These are things I like to hear.
Yeah, this is how I would handle it.
A seventh grade civics class can answer this faster than you can.
Yes, I'm going to wait until you shut up so that I can answer the question that I think Americans want to hear. I know what my plan is, sir. What is your plan?
Can you explain how the government works to us?
How does a bill become a law? Rinse, wash, repeat. Stay on it. Now, I'm a little nervous because they have to stand really close to each other, hence the ick factor. But let's take some of your thoughts. 855-752-4842. What are you looking for, worried about, excited for this evening at the great debate, perhaps the only one? Cam from Appleton, what are you looking for this evening?
Hey, Maggie. I am thinking, I have a worry about it, actually, and it's one that I don't think I've been able to get over the more back and forth I go with it in my head, and it's the fact that she usually uses notes, and I think that that's, like, pretty typical of prosecutors, right? They usually use
so in debates
they got them all in front of them.
Yeah, in debates, typically lawyers will have notes. I often argued free form without them because I didn't want a crutch, and it keeps it extemporaneous. My understanding is that in most debates, including her VP when she was debating for vice president, they can't take any written materials up there. What they can do is they have a notepad in front of them, and they can write things down while they're standing up there.
Right. And I hope that that is ending up to be enough for her, because when she has her notes, oh man, she is articulate. Because, like, when you had your show showing the Kavanaugh hearing and
yes.
the Barr
yep.
hearing, I remember the show. I remember having seen those clips before the show even.
Yeah.
And it was still satisfying the second time around. She absolutely destroyed those men.
Yeah, she did. I actually think trial lawyers are just uniquely suited for debating. Okay, because a trial lawyer's job, and I worked on the Enron case. There was like 8 million documents, even after Arthur Anderson shredded like millions. And what you have to do as a lawyer is you have to master all of these facts, the details. You have to know what your point is, what the outcome that you're seeking. You have to tell the story. And so she has had decades of training to do the very thing that a debate is supposed to suss out, which is both your ability to tell a story that's captivating, that matches people's common sense and their lived experiences, and also master and demonstrate that you understand some of the details of policy. Now, my concern, Cam, is that she gets too into the weeds. Like, keep it high level, keep knocking the guy for not ever explaining anything well, ever, not once, nope, not ever, That's what I hope she does. Charles from Oconomowoc, what do you have to say? What are you looking for this afternoon?
I think she'll do well. I think she'll be able to hold her own. But one thing I wish could happen from the moderator is at the start of the debate, I wish they would make him own his two statements. The first one being about the doctors basically killing babies after they're born.
Yep.
I would be on him to tell me what doctor do you know did in what hospital, and same with the parents sending their kids to school and are coming home, you know, 2 days later with the gender-affirming surgery.
Surgery. Yeah, Charles, I couldn't agree with you more. Those are two of the more bananas statements that he's made in the last couple of weeks. Democrats support killing babies after they're born. No, that's a crime in every state. Thank you. Second, that all of a sudden, schools are going to just randomly perform gender reassignment surgery on kids and parents will have no say in it. Nope, that's a lie. Never happened. What the hell are you talking about? Right? It's ridiculous. Couldn't agree with you more, Charles. I think candidates need to be held to account. And it's high time the moderators and Kamala Harris as a candidate and the press stop looking at these statements and be like, oh, well, he meant this. No, perhaps we should take the guy at his word. Andrew from Detroit, what are you looking for this afternoon?
Hey, Maggie. Hey, Fancy. As an attorney, as all of the legal jobs she's had, this is her wheelhouse. You know, she's got to know that she is arguing this in front of the jury. She is not arguing this with the defense or speaking to the judge. She is talking to the jury, and she knows that. She's got this. A couple of things I'm hoping she'll do, which are kind of nasty. You know, I wish I it speaks evil of me. But if she brings up her race, I hope that baits him, because I can't wait for him to drop the N-word. And then if she gets a little nasty at one point, then he brings up the B-word, and then she just gets into her wheelhouse for the rest of the debate.
Yeah, I think she is going to try to bait him, Andrew. I agree with that. He's not hard to bait. He might be hard to debate, but he is not hard to bait, B-A-I-T.
Yeah, I'm hoping for a bunch of mental judo.
Yeah.
Just, yeah, come here. Oh, you fell down again. Look at you.
Folks, we've got Yes Chef coming up next with Adam Pawlak. We're going to talk about his private chefing experiences, maybe some nightmare clients. He'll give you some tips on what to do and not to do if you ever hire a private chef or go to a private chef party or eat food outside of your home. Gotta be a good customer. I can't wait, personally. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is The Maggie Dawn Show. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Your farm update is next, and then I'll be back with Chef Adam. Yes, Chef!
Well, Donald.
I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
What's up, Wisconsin? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I got two fancy guys with me this half hour. Of course, there's Fancy Brian, my producer, and also Fancy Chef Adam Pawlak. Welcome back. It is time for Yes Chef, because it's Tuesday at 2:30. How you doing, Adam?
Yes, Chef. I'm doing good. How are you doing? Yes, Chef.
Yeah, I'm pumped. We got a debate coming up. I'm going to be eating with friends while watching politics tonight. Other than eating and drinking with friends while watching baseball, that's kind of like the trifecta for me.
That's the next thing.
Right. Next best thing. So I wanted to start out with a little personal question for you, because this one I have never really changed the answer to. What are the like one or two foods, and it doesn't have to be like a hamburger, it could be like a food ingredient, that if someone told you you could never eat or use again, you would just be devastated?
Oh, man. Devastated?
Yeah. Like, I'm going to stop eating and cooking.
Okay. Can it be a recipe or just a certain kind of food?
So I'll
or not a recipe. Sorry. An ingredient.
Yes.
If it's an ingredient, and not because of pasta, because people say, oh, it's pasta, but I would say eggs and flour would be two horrible ingredients to lose, because they're so versatile and we use them in so many things. That would bring me a very
to your knees.
That bring me
a
down.
Chef. Yeah.
Yes.
And it fits, because Chef Adam Pawlak, his restaurant is called Egg and Flour. You can find it in the View of the Bay in the Milwaukee area. Okay, so here's my two. There's actually three. And
okay.
I'm totally down with the egg and flour, but my two, maybe three, are I absolutely love tomatoes. My mom had a garden growing up. I used to eat them off the vine like apples with a little salt on it. It was like nature's Gatorade, right? Good to go.
Right.
Go back outside.
I like that one.
Love tomatoes. I put onions on everything, basically, other than like cereal and pancakes. Like, onions go on everything. What are you eating? Put onions on it. You making scrambled eggs? Put some onions in it. Scrambled eggs? Cut up chives on it. I don't know. It's garnish. It's ingredient. I love onions, onions, onions. I once went out on a date with a guy, and he said, I don't like onions. And I was like, well, waiter, check, please. We got to go. And my third one.
That is hardcore.
He also told me he had never eaten pineapple. And he grew up in Winnetka, Illinois. So I was like, what, you weirdo. He also told me that the only vegetables he eats would be in the pizza sauce on a pizza. I could go on. He was very strange, hence the end of the date.
Sure.
The third
We're
thing,
not going to name that man.
No. He was an accountant. That should have tipped me off. The third ingredient, and this is another thing that I've loved since I was a kid, and I love them in desserts, so this is for the sort of sweet angle, are oranges. Any, like, the whole orange family. I just love oranges. So those are my three things. I thought I'd kick it off. I like egg and flour. They are staples. Can't do much without eggs and flour.
Yeah, and I mean, I like yours, that yours are like things that you love, you know, so I could say like cheese, or I could say like, if all the cows just tipped over one day in the world, that would be a very sad
bad
day as well.
Not good.
Beef. Yeah.
But today I wanted to highlight and frankly, maybe get some dish from you, chef. You also, in addition to having your own joint, you do some private chefing. And
yes.
First of all, so if people don't know what a private chef is, or like I call it gun for hire, chef for hire. What is a private chef? Or like, is it event based? Do you work with one person all the time? Is it meal? But like, what's your variety? Because it can encompass a whole gamut of things, right? It could be somebody that needs meal prepping for specific dietary things. Yep. They could hire a private chef to do that. It could be some rich person that just wants somebody to make them cereal. Yep, they could do that. Or it could be, it's my 50th anniversary. I want it to be really special, and I'd want someone to cook a really special meal for me and my friends.
Yeah, so you pretty much like hit everything that I was going to touch on, where it's like private chefing is, you know, a spectrum of all those things that you brought up, everything from, you know, being a chef for a family where you work Monday through Friday, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and you don't see them on the weekend, you let them fend for themselves, whatever, you do that. Some private chefs are, you know, for a specific reason, like you said, is meal prepping or getting the person, whether it's a singular person or a family or a couple, ahead of the game, you know, maybe for their meals ahead of the week where they're busy or they need something specific or they're tracking macros or calories and stuff like that, where it's like, hey, I can do that for you, no problem. And then I feel like in the realm of where I am is more experience-based and custom, you know, where I usually don't say no to anything and I want to make that person's experience or their idea that they have, you know, come to life. And that's part of being a really good private chef and not just saying, here's a set menu. And I mean, there's chefs out there, which is totally fine, where you go on their website, you pick a menu or you pick a package, and then they come to your house and they execute that. But the thing that sets me apart, and which I think is part of the, you know, part of the draw for what I do, is that I am all over the place, whether it is private classes where you just want to learn how to cook. So we still call that private chefing, you know, and private events. If you want someone to come and do a family style thing for a large group of friends, or heavy appetizers all night, and my heavy appetizers, like I bring a team of chefs with me and we pretty much do full composed plates, just in a smaller version. So, there's chefs like that, or there's experiences like that that I do. Or, you know, we get into the 10 to 14 person sit down, 6 to 7 courses, maybe wine pairings or beverage pairings, multiple desserts, small bites in between, full on restaurant experience in your home. And then honestly, anything that you can fit in the nicks and crannies of that or far in between of what we just talked about, that's what I do. So I just like to put on experiences. I like to do things that people haven't seen before, kind of push the limits. And I always say, I will figure it out.
Yes. Yes, chef. I will figure it out. I love that. I mean, I'm all down for like, let me get a whole bunch of my friends together. I don't know, chef, see what looks good when you go to the farmer's market, make us 6 courses of whatever floats your boat and see what happens. That to me is the most fun.
And you'd be surprised at how many people are like that, which is great. And the people that I deal with specifically, I feel like have some sort of a base idea.
Sure.
And then they let me either run with it or they say, hey, these are a couple of things that we can't have, whether it's allergy or we just don't like it. And that's what I always ask. And then give me a list of things that you really do love. And then let me kind of go from there. And it's not like I hide the menu until the night of or whatever.
Right,
I'll send it over to them and I'll say, hey, how does this look? Do we want to make adjustments? Do we want to do things like that? And most of the time, you know, people are happy with what I come up with and kind of give them a reason for things. I think food is the perfect way as like a storyteller's book. as to that's very, very interactive, we'll say. So an interactive book is how I put on my dinners and my experiences and showing people what I've learned over the years and the food that I like to cook. And, you know, you're only going to get the best food if the chef really enjoys cooking what you have on the menu as well. So that's important.
So this, that's kind of where I wanted to go, which is I was not the host and these were not close friends, but I was at a dinner recently and I had one of these like massive cringe moments where a person, in my opinion, was being difficult for the sake of being difficult to try to act or demonstrate or make people think that they were incredibly discerning. You know who I'm describing, right? It's like, oh, I'll complain about all these different things. And all you end up doing is looking like you're showing your backside, right? Like the faux sort of litany of complaints, the difficult, near impossible to please clients. Have you run across these people? Because what a freaking nightmare. And I've never understood it in the food and or dining experience, because as you just said, Chef Adam, chefs cook better when they're enjoying and it's a positive relationship and you're not a pain in the butt. Like you think the food's actually going to get better if you tick the chef off? Like, don't do that.
Yeah, like for me, I would say since I've been doing this for a long time now, I feel like I'm pretty seasoned in my, you know, orientations, we'll call it, or what's the word for it when you talk to them prior to the event and kind of break it down. And I think I cover enough things where like there's not a lot of surprises. There's not a lot of things that go wrong. If I start building a menu and someone gives me all those things in advance where it's like, all right, one of 12 guests is gluten-free, one of 12 doesn't eat red meat, one is only vegetarian, that is totally fine. I mean, it's my job to make those people happy, and I'm not going to lose out on a whole experience just because I don't want to cook one person something, you know? Like, I'll honestly take it as, like, a challenge, too, where it's like, hey, they're almost more important than everyone else because I want to make sure that what I'm making for them doesn't seem like an afterthought as well. So I like to put in just the amount of time on those special, you know, dietary allergies, preferences, than the menu that I came up with originally, because it's just important that they're having a good time and they feel like it's worth it and they're not left out. And that's important. But I have, had to make some different decisions and game time decisions if someone's like, oh yeah, I forgot to tell you, like, I can't have any garlic. And I'm like, okay, well, let's see what we can do, you know? And I think that that's part of the fun. Do I want to do it every single event and experience that I book? Probably not. This right. isn't a cry for, hey, let's challenge Adam as much as possible and see what he comes up with. But
so
that would be a fun thing.
Yeah. So on this point, do you watch any of the like the Bravo Network reality series? And I'm specifically talking about Below Deck, because every time I have ever watched one of those shows, the people that I feel the most like, oh my gosh, is the chefs and the litany of demands and get the chef up out of bed to make me a pizza at 4 o'clock in the morning. Have you ever seen this show? It looks like a nightmare for chefs.
Yes, I have seen the show. And I feel like that's like, you know, obviously I'm sure they deal with a lot and those people are definitely skilled at what they do. And that's their thing. It's kind of like being like chefs on like cruise ships and stuff,
yes.
where it's like so demanding, long hours, stuff like that. And you got to remember that it is a TV show. So who knows on how many times that chef's probably just sitting there waiting to get the call to make that pizza or whatever it is. You know, I mean, who knows? But I have seen the show. I think it's really awesome. I think it would be fun to do, a month maybe out on the water or something. Or there's a family that owns a large boat that has kitchen accessibility and stuff. And they want to put on some events. But I think it's pretty funny. You know, some people have really, really high standards or they think that anything is possible. And, you know, I think it's okay as a chef to say, I will do my best or like, let me see what I'm capable. But I hope people would understand that like some things just aren't possible to pull off.
Yeah.
If it's short notice, you know.
Yeah. Well,
if we're planning something a few months out, sure, let's make it happen. I'll make sure that everything is how you want it. But if we're talking about like 20 minutes in or, hey, on the next course, can you leave this
right,
out?
It's
like, oh, it's kind of a bum.
Well, and the provisioning, just the whole element of the planning that has to go into it. And the thing that puts chefs on blast, basically, is like those last minute changes that you were talking about. I liken it. This is my own like layperson take on this. I do a bit of camping, Adam, and my favorite thing about camping is making really, really good food when camping. It's like victory over the elements. Like, I have imposed my human will. We are eating perfectly cooked food and a beautiful salad, right? And it's like chefs that can pull that off in a floating, seaworthy vessel in large waves are always like, wow.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's super important to if someone's camping or what. I haven't gone in a while, but if anyone's out there and wants to hire a chef for their camping trip, I'd be more than down to come and join you and just do everything open, in the open flame above the fire. I think that would be a fun challenge as well.
Oh, Adam, you're giving me notions of glamping plans. Plus, I have like
You're going to be one of those customers like, I need lobster Benedict now.
No, I will not ask you to make any sort of sauces that can break out in the wild. That is just downright down. No Bernays. We're not. No, none of that. It's not happening. That's just too gosh darn.
Call that a challenge.
That is a damn challenge. It is Yes Chef, because it is Tuesday at 2:30. I'm joined by Chef Adam Pavlak. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. We'll be back with more in just a moment. Keep it locked.
Referring to me as Frankenstein.
I love it.
See what's going on.
I'm the one who resembles that guy more than anybody else.
I resemble that remark. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show, but I'm joined by two fancy guys. My producer, Fancy Brian, and Yes Chef, Chef Adam Pavlak, owner and operator of Egg and Flour, private chef extraordinaire. Adam, we've been talking about private chefing a bit. And I wondered if you might regale us, without naming names, you know, protect the innocent here. Do you have a nightmare client? Do you have a nightmare client story? Because this is the stuff people really want to hear. Like, give us the dish.
I wouldn't say nightmare because I have some pretty tough skin. You know, working in restaurants my whole life and then going to be a private chef, it's kind of hard for them to top what I've already seen. One that comes to mind, I would say, is one that was checking on me. I think we were 3.5 weeks out of an event and I was being checked in on daily.
Ooh.
For 3.5 weeks about, you know, small things, which, you know, that's fine. This person, you know, is just trying to put on a good event and a good experience for her guests, you know, and I would say, I can openly and honestly say, I wouldn't say I'm on the cheap realm of hire, you know, and people are spending good money to have me do something. And I would just say that was one where I was just, you know, I was trying to reassure every single time and no matter what, the next day I'd get a text or a call or an email or whatever it was, which I wouldn't say, like I said, not nightmare client, but I think it'd be
a little high maintenance,
pretty,
high maintenance.
Just worried like, hey, just let me do my job. I promise.
That's Chef Adam Pavlak and his little dog, too. I've had a few of those clients myself, sir. I call them high touch clients where here's another version of it where I'll get like they'll call me and leave a voice message. Then they'll text me about the voicemail and then I'll get an email about the voicemail and the text. I'm like, one will do. I will be back to you in 24 hours. But we're calling this segment Yes, Chef. And I mean, I think it's obvious to everybody, but Yes Chef has entered the vernacular in a totally, totally kind of new way. I think largely driven by the TV show The Bear, But tell people, like, why is Yes Chef, like, the buzzword that it is? It's not just used when, like, the executive chef gives a directive to a line chef, is it? It's used in the vernacular referring to everybody from front of house to back of house. Everybody gets responded to as Yes Chef when you're working in restaurants. What's that about? Why is that such a thing? Why is that done?
Sure. So I wouldn't say it happens in restaurants from everything. I feel in the true real world, Yes Chef is used in the back of house for the person that's on top. I know that the Bear shows that happening, you know, and that they all talk to each other like that and they respond to each other like that, which I think is kind of like a fun thing to show. Like, hey, we're all in this together. We're all a team.
Yep.
So I think that that's something that maybe they're showing in that show, or that's how he wants to run his kitchen and whatnot. But honestly, I don't work in a lot of restaurants, or I haven't worked in a lot of restaurants or kitchens where we're saying Yes Chef to a server or something, or even to the front of house manager or whatever. It's only to, you know, the chef. And that's a simple way of saying, yes Chef, there's no other questions. We don't need to say anything else. It's yes, I understand. And it's just a quick way, because it's all about communication in the kitchen.
Yeah, there's so many cool things that being around some folks that have worked for a long time in restaurants. I got a bunch of friends in service, few clients on the legal side that own restaurants and bars. And just being around, there's so much vernacular, right? There's so much sort of all kinds of, and not just the technical terms for, you know, like a julienne versus a dice or a chop or those sort of the building blocks of cooking, but just how you actually walk around in a kitchen to avoid the dangers, of which there are so very many in a kitchen. Some handy dandy tips there for sure. I was once in one of Milwaukee's best restaurants. And the head chef, he was helping to bring the plates out and tell people, you know, here's what you're eating, blah, blah, blah. And I said, chef, blah, blah, blah. And I asked him a question, right, addressing him as chef. And I thought this was really cool, kind of to your point about the Bear, was in response to that, he looked at me and he said, miss, and by then I had introduced him, he said, Maggie, you don't call me chef. This is my name. You call me this, and that's Sarah, and that's John, and that's Derek, right? And he had dispensed with the entire sort of conceit of Yes Chef. I think it's interesting how different restaurants and locations engage with those sort of hierarchical structures in kitchens very differently. Oh, what's your little doggy's name? We very vocal this afternoon.
He is, and he was so good in the first segment. I think he's starting to get his zoomies and be like, hey, why are you not looking at me and paying attention?
Yeah,
his name is Alfredo.
Oh, well, of course his name is Alfredo. Well, you tell Alfredo we will see him and you next week, because every Tuesday at 2:30, it is this now newly named segment called Yes Chef with Chef Adam Pavlik of Egg and Flour.
And this is him right here. If you're watching the live feed, he's a little monster.
Folks, that is a black and tan
dachshund.
And that is a very, very cute black and tan dachshund. And I just want to snuggle with that. I'll see you guys later.
Yeah, which means that Chef Adam and your host, me, Maggie Dawn, have matching dachshunds. Mine is brown and caramel. His is black and tan. We'll describe all of it in food terms, of course. You can catch Adam and I again every Tuesday at 2:30 for our little segment called Yes Chef. Have a great week, Adam. Cook great food.
Thank you so much. I love being on.
It's super fun. As Wisconsin's own Penzi Spices says, love people. Cook them good food.
I like cooking people as food, but that's just me.
Listen, folks, we're going to be back at the top of the hour, and it is 3:00, and every day that means it's Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. I'm so excited to be joined by Professor Dorothy Brown. She's the Martin Ginsburg Chair of Taxation at Georgetown University Law Center. She's been studying tax policy for quite some time, and it doesn't surprise me one iota that our tax system is a bit racist. We'll talk about why when we come back. It's important for each and every one of us to know not just how the tax system basically is set up to screw over the middle class, but again, that it has very real racial implications. We'll talk about it next here on The Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
Don't wipe your hands on your apron, Chef.
Jeff.
Chef.